The Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell just got bigger. Featuring former defensive star and three-time national champion at Nebraska and NFL player Jason Peter. Jason Peter under the helmet. With Jason Peter on the Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell.
And we are back this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. And here we go, Super Bowl 47. It is rapidly approaching. The countdown is on. We have heard all the major storylines, the Harbaugh brothers, Ray Lewis. It's his last game. But in our next segment, we want to hit on some of the X's and O's and break down the matchups that will determine the Super Bowl. I'm anticipating this is going to be a black and blue contest. These guys are going to get after it. And joining us on the Mercer Well service line is a former NFL player, of course, played with the Carolina Panthers from 98 to 02, and he is our three-time national champion, the great, great Jason Peter. Jason, I know this is one of your favorite weekends out of the year.
It really is. My wife was trying to plan something. Her birthday is this weekend. I said, listen, we're just going to have to kind of push your birthday back another week because I'm not going to be on a plane or in a car or anywhere besides in front of the TV this weekend. You know, this is it. This is the pinnacle, I think, in all of sports. I don't know if there's an event, because it's not even a game at this point. It's an event that's any bigger. You know, in any sport, maybe, you know, when you talk about on an international level, maybe you can mention the World Cup. And I was fortunate to go to the World Cup when it was in Germany in 06, but I didn't see the championship match or anything, so I don't know exactly the magnitude, but I do know and was able to witness kind of the environment in what would be, I guess, kind of the playoffs of soccer, and you know that was certainly big. But being at a Super Bowl when my brother played in 2000, there's nothing like it. There really isn't. It's amazing. It's a bucket list sort of trip. And you know, I think when every year when the football season starts, you think the Super Bowl it's such a long ways away, and it's on you before you know it.
You know, it was interesting. We were talking earlier, and I have to share with our listeners, you know, of course, the Carolina connection, the time that you played for the Panthers. And as I understand, there's a lot of former coaches that are still a part of this from your playing days.
Yeah, you have both coordinators from San Francisco with Vic Fangio, who was, he's a defense coordinator, and he was our defense coordinator under Dom Capers, and that would have been my first year in 98. And he's kind of bounced around here and there. He was with the Texans for a while, and you know, he kind of I think stuck around maybe with Dom Capers for a couple of years here and there. But anyway, he hooked up with Jim Harbaugh, who was in Carolina for part of, gosh, I think it was the 2000 or 2001 season, and he just came in for maybe 10, 11 games, and I don't know if that had anything to do, because obviously those coaching staffs weren't there at the time, but he has kind of picked up a bunch of these guys, and Greg Roman, who was just, I mean, at the bottom level when I was there in Carolina. I mean,
really?
He was kind of getting his foot in the door, and it's really a great story, because, you know, it hasn't been that long. I mean, I know, you know, sometimes we look back at, you know, 5-10 years ago, like it's almost ancient time, but here's a guy who just put his nose to the grindstone, and now he is, you know, an offensive coordinator, and, you know, he was with Jim at Stanford, and he had the option, I believe, of either staying at Stanford or going with Jim to San Francisco, and he went with him to San Francisco. But, I mean, really just kind of like that American story almost. You know, if you work hard, and certainly it's about knowing the right people, that I think that plays a part in a lot of people's success stories, but really just very, very successful, and you know, I think being able to work for Jim Harbaugh can't be that bad too, because he just from the short time I got to know him, he is one of those kind of, you know, you're going to get out of it what you put into it. And I think that's kind of been his whole mindset with those guys. You know, you can be as good as you want to be. It's just up to you how much work you want to put in.
It is truly a business of hard work, but also about relationships and about who you know. Of course, we're talking about the offensive coordinator for San Francisco, Greg Roman. And let's take our conversation here. Let's talk about the offensive package. They have a number of weapons in their run game, but the crown jewel of their receiving corps is their fourth-year wideout in Michael Crabtree. Of course, we were remember him right here in the Big 12 Conference with Texas Tech. He just continually gets better each and every season. This year, case in point, it was his best season yet.
Yeah, and I mean, I remember when he was coming out from Texas Tech and a lot of question marks about his character and, you know, if he'd be worth a high pick like that. And, you know, I know there were some problems early on, but he's kind of... I think Jim Harbaugh has been very good for him because, like I said, kind of his mindset in Harbaugh's, all that prima donna sort of stuff, that doesn't fly under a guy like Harbaugh. He will give you your walking papers, you know, faster than you know what happened. And I think he also has a lot of good veterans to learn from. You know, you talk about Randy Moss, who's, 14, 15 years, and, you know, certainly not the same Randy Moss that first came into the league with, you know, squirting referees with water bottles and what have you, but he's a veteran guy now who, I'm watching him the other day at the media day, and he looks just every bit as in shape today as he did 14 years ago, and you only sustain that sort of career if you're doing the little things right. And at some point, you know, the young kid in you has got to say goodbye to that guy, you know, because if you want a long career like that, you're going to have to do the little things, the watching of the game tape, the spending time in the training room, taking care of your body. I mean, your body is kind of your temple and that's your business. And you better make sure that you got it kind of at the highest level it can operate. You know, so I think he's got guys, you talk Vernon Davis, Frank Gore, you know, there are a lot of guys on that offense that I think have helped Michael Crabtree along the way.
Jason, I am so glad that you brought up the name Randy Moss, because we were talking about this in our earlier segment, you know, him coming out, making, kind of thumping on his chest, making these bold statements saying that, you know, he is the best at his position. Would you agree with that? Because Jerry Rice vehemently disagrees.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's hard to, and people do this, whether it's out here at Nebraska or any major college town or just, you know, across in any sport, people want to say, well, this was the best player and this was, you know, the second best or third best. It really, you know, it's so hard. I don't even think there's a way of saying this guy was better than that guy. They're all great. Because to say that, you know, one guy's better than the other is totally discounting what his teammates did for him in a team sport. I mean, you know, it goes down to, you know, the offensive lines. And is the right guard getting, you know, beat like a drum all day to the point where Steve Young or Joe Montana can't throw the ball or Dante Culpepper or Tom Brady? I mean, there's so many different things. You know, the run games, because if you have successful run games, well, that's going to open up the passing game. I think they're different types of receivers. I think with Jerry Rice, it was a precision sort of game. It was running the perfect route. He wasn't the fastest guy on the field. It was being that consummate professional where it was kind of his life, and there was nothing else that was going to sidetrack him. Randy Moss, a little different. You know, there was always the danger, or I think as if you're a fan of the Vikings or the Pats or whoever team he was playing for, you know, is Randy Moss going to do something stupid? And that's mostly earlier on, I think, with the Vikings. But I think with Randy Moss, you got this big play You got this big play threat. I think you got a guy that when he lined up out there, there was that was a guy that defensive coordinators feared, and they had to, you know, kind of sit up there in the press box, up in the eye in the sky, you know, all the way on top, and they're crossing their fingers, saying, "Oh man, you know, just let's hope that that Moss doesn't run down the field here and gets behind coverage, and you know, he's hitting his head on the goalpost." So I think they're different types of receivers. I think they're both, you know, top five, if that's fair to say. But I'm not one who says, you know, one is one and one is two. And I think they're both of them have accomplished enough that, you know, they're great. They're both of them are just great.
Jason Peter with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. Of course, we always like to direct you to our radio website. That is eradiosports.com. You can email us at info@eradiosports.com. We've also have some great videos on there. Click on the e-video link. And Jason, we've been talking about offensively, but San Francisco, they are very physical defensively. And the defensive line that allows that, of course, is that Patrick Willis and Navarro Bowman. Tell us a little bit about that, as they are the game's premier duo inside.
Yeah, you'd be hard to find two better linebackers on one roster. You know, and maybe the only other team is the team that they're playing in Baltimore. But Bowman and Patrick Willis have just, these guys, you know, both Pro Bowlers, both tough as nails, both can play in the run. They can, you know, smash it up there with the big offensive linemen, and both of them are athletic enough to cover guys in coverage, whether it be tight ends or slot guys or backs running out of the backfield. They're two talented guys, but you know, I think it all starts up front, and San Francisco's got a good line. You know, Justin Smith, Missouri guy, and another Missouri guy, and Alden Smith, you know, who just has been able to get after the quarterback like nobody's been able to for such a young guy. I think everybody was pretty certain he was going to break the Michael Strahan sack record this year, and he kind of hit a wall there at the end of the season. I think in the last three or four games, I think he was maybe held without a sack, but he ended with 19 and a half, and that's pretty darn good. And he's a guy that Baltimore certainly, I think, is going to have to make sure, you know, that he's not a guy who's going to be breathing down Joe Flacco's neck all game. Whether you got to commit extra guys to block him or you have a back chip on him, but they're solid, you know, from the front to the back. Both teams are. They really are. I mean, this is going to be a low-scoring game, but who knows? Usually when we think it's going to be low-scoring, what happens is, you know, both teams end up ripping off 35, 40 points. But if I was a betting man, which I'm not, I would tend to believe it'd probably be a low-scoring game.
Jason, we've only got about 60 seconds. Can you weigh in? Tell us a little bit about, as far as, you know, Ray Lewis. He's had such a decorated career, of course, receiving some unfortunate publicity this week, but it has been a highly publicized retirement story throughout the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and, you know, it's bound to happen. On a stage this big, somebody wants their 5 minutes of fame. And, you know, I don't know whether the NFL will look into this whole deer antler spray or whatever it may be. I know there's some Alabama guys from the university getting dragged into it, and maybe a couple LSU guys. I'm not quite sure of all the facts involved. But, you know, Ray seems to stand up there and he declares his innocence and all this, and he says he's not going to get dragged into it. That, you know, it's exactly what I had said, is a guy looking for some media and some fame, and he's not even going to really acknowledge it. You know, I think at this day and age, when you have a guy, especially in the game of football, that's played as long as he has at such a high level, you talk about, you know, the tricep injury and being able to come back and you know, help his team to the Super Bowl.
Uh-huh.
The speculation is there, I think, and that's just the day and age that we live in. So questions will always be asked, for a guy that certainly has played as long as he has.
Jason Peter has been with us, getting us ready for Super Bowl 47 as the countdown is on. Jason, thanks for stopping by and enjoy the game.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. We're going to step aside. Much more straight ahead.
Don't complain about your cable bill going up and up and up. Do something about it. Grab a pencil and jot down this special number. 1-855-545-MYTV. The more cable TV rates go up, the better digital satellite TV looks. So cancel the cable and get more of your favorite channels in 100% digital quality for less money. Call 1-855-545-MYTV. Right now to sign up for packages starting as low as $19.99 and there's no equipment to buy. You get free HD TV upgrade, a free DVR upgrade, and free professional installation. You control what you watch, when you watch it. Record your favorite shows, pause and rewind live TV, even skip the commercials. Watch local channels too. At just $19.99, what are you waiting for? Pull out your major credit or debit card. Call 1-855-545-MYTV. 1-855-545-MYTV. Cancel the cable, cut costs, and get more. 1-855-545-MYTV. 1-855-545-MYTV. Elissa Walker-Campbell is on the air,
asking the questions you want to know,
with sports' biggest and best name, Dallas Mavericks head coach Rick Carlisle.
And one of the ways you get high percentage threes is to get offensive rebounds and toss them back out. And if we don't get those rebounds, they're going to get them and toss them back out.
Now, rebounding is a massively important stat.
The fastest hour in radio. Big names, big sports talk. The Big E Sports Show, hosted by Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Welcome back to another edition of our Beyond the X's and O's segment right here at eradiosports.com. I'm your host, Elissa Walker-Campbell, and it is always a true pleasure when we have the opportunity to catch up with the Dallas Mavericks head coach, Rick Carlisle. And Rick, it has been fast, it's been furious, winners of 5 out of your last 6 games, and I'm going to assume that you really embraced this 4-day intermission and the opportunity to refine some things to practice before the second half of the season.
Yeah, we need the time. We have things to get better at both sides of the ball. This is a rare opportunity during the season to get some rest, and yet you have to work on the things you need to work on. The temptation always is in coaching to add things because you have time, but the reality is you have to hone in on your competitiveness, your efficiency with the ball, and your execution of the simple things, and that's what we're doing.
It really has this season, as you step back and look at it, it's been survival of the fittest, quite a narrative and storyline to say the least. Rick, you guys got off to that hot 4-1 start, and then it just seemed like you had to deal with a compilation of a number of issues, from missing your marquee player in Dirk to 15 different starting rotations and 9 overtimes. But the good news is right now it's all coming together and you're trending in the right direction.
We are trending in the right direction for sure, and that's a very positive thing on the one hand. On the other hand, you know, we got to be careful not to look at that and just take it for granted. Every game that we have coming up here, and, you know, we have San Antonio coming up this Friday, and they're a top team. They're a top 5 team in the league. We've lost 2 games to them, and they both, you know, they've been, neither game has been as competitive as it should have been. And so, you know, we got something to prove when we play those guys. And if we aspire to be a playoff team, this cannot simply be about just wanting to get to the playoffs and be happy with that. We want to be playing at a level where we can get to the playoffs and have an opportunity to win. And so every game's critical. We've been digging out of a hole here for a while. The hole is still there. It's a little shallower than it was, which is good. But, you know, we have good guys, and things have turned a little bit, but we got to be careful that, you know, we don't look at that and say, hey, we've got it figured out. You never have it figured out.
Right, and we're going to preview the San Antonio game here in just a moment. But, Rick, you've been the head coach of the Dallas Mavericks for 5 years. You've been a player and a coach in this league for many years. And as you step back, I mean, what is the anatomy of making a comeback when you go through those lulls and those dark periods? I mean, you're a winner. You're accustomed to winning. How do you muscle through that?
Well, it starts with belief. I go back to about 10 days ago, or whenever it was, we were in Sacramento. Actually, it was 2 weeks ago tomorrow. So the time is, as you say, is flying by. We had a morning breakfast meeting. We were on a back-to-back. We had come from the Clipper game the previous night. We had played well, had a lead in the fourth, couldn't finish, couldn't close. You know, it was a similar refrain to some of our problems leading up to that point. And, you know, we got together in the morning, and I put it on the board. You know, we were 2-13 or 3-13 in our last 15 games or whatever it was. And I just said, hey, guys, you know, it's been a murderous schedule, all that kind of stuff, but we're better than this. And, you know, I said, take a look at this, and drew up, you know, the eighth team and then the rest of the group below. And at that point, we were 7 games out of the playoffs. And so we had, at that point, played quite a few more road games than home. We were on the mend in terms of our health. Dirk was doing better and better. And we had just come through a murderous part of our schedule. So I said, look, if you look at these factors, okay, 7 games is a lot. It's not insurmountable. But it's got to start with, you know, a belief that we can do it. And here's why we can. And so I pointed out those things. And I said, but it's got to start tonight. I told him, there's a good chance tonight's going to be an overtime game because these things tend to come in waves. And at that point, we had, I think we'd had, we were 0-7 or whatever it was in overtimes. And that's rough. And sure enough, it was an overtime game. We had to go deep in the bench to win that one. And that win kind of got us going a little bit. Then we came home, we won. We won 3 at home before we dropped the 1 to Oklahoma City in another overtime game, and you know, then a good win in Orlando. So now we have this period, and we have really a championship caliber team coming in here in San Antonio, and we've got to continue to keep this thing moving the right way.
Rick, you point out the Sacramento game, but I think back, I flipped the calendar to the month of December, and at the 1/3 through the season when you guys were getting ready to face Memphis, you had talked about the fact that you didn't have your starting five solidified, and at that point of the season, you didn't have five guys that had started and that had played a total of 55 minutes on the floor. What is it like now that you have solidified that starting lineup, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 guys, now they know what to anticipate? That's got to give you as a player a sense of comfort knowing when coach is going to call on you.
It helps, you know, and being able to get some, you know, similarity from game to game, I think is something that's good for the players on the one hand, and yet we don't want our guys to get too comfortable. we want there to be a certain kind of good edge tension to our situation, because that's always going to bring out the best in you. The whole thing with all the different lineups, I mean, that's fodder for excuses, you know, if you look at that stuff. And that was another reason that I pointed out to the guys that I felt we had an opportunity to begin our climb out of the big hole. And, you know, and certainly that was a factor. And I think where we are now, we're in better position. But as I said, the work goes on. It's we have nothing figured out. And if the second we ever feel like we do, you know, we're going to get hit in the face again.
Well, I know as a coach that you're never satisfied, but is there one particular game, 5 out of the last 6 games I talked about you guys have won, that you really point to that perhaps the potential of this team and what you guys might be able to accomplish? I think of the game against Minnesota, the fact that you guys scored 113 points, only had 9 turnovers. I mean, you're one of those offensive juggernauts in the Western Conference, too. You can put up some points.
We can, and our turnovers have been better in the last 2 or 3 weeks. And the guys have worked hard at that. You know, the biggest thing for us is defense and rebounding, because when we have problems rebounding the ball, we're giving the opponent extra opportunities to score, and we're removing opportunities for ourselves to go the other way in transition, which is the best part of our game. We're a top 3 team in the league in fast break points. We're up there in pace, you know, we want to keep the game moving, and I like our depth. So, you know, Minnesota, we played well. I thought we played well against Memphis, even though they were kind of fried coming off a back-to-back. Houston, you know, we've had 2 tough games with them, but we've won them both. Those are big games, and that's a team we've got to beat out if we're going to make it. You know, and then Oklahoma City is just, you know, that was one that we had a real opportunity and just couldn't get it done. So, and then after that, the game in Orlando is a huge win for us. I mean, that's a team that's a capable team. They've played pretty well at home, and, you know, that one could have gone either way. So, you know, we are where we are. We are what our record is, and at this point with 40 games left, you know, there's a lot, I think, to be excited about on the one hand, but, you know, our optimism is cautious to the point that, you know, we know we've got to keep an edge. We know that we've got to continue to focus on the rebounding, and we got to keep our turnovers down.
Where are the breakdowns coming in with rebounding? You don't have a big bruising center on the inside. Is it just a matter of you guys staying that much more disciplined, getting a body on somebody and pushing them out of the lane?
Well, you know, a lot of nights the teams we line up with are more athletic than us. At times they're bigger and more athletic. But when you're on defense, you should be between your man and the basket. And so in those situations, we just got to be more vigilant about checking out and then going and pursuing the ball. And, you know, unlike other years where we had guys like Jason Kidd, who was, you know, one of the greatest rebounders ever at the point guard position, he'd scoop up five or six. And some nights you get 10. You know, we've got smaller guys at the point position, and getting those guys to get in there and be more aggressive has been a key too. And when we get four, five, six rebounds at our point guard position, we almost always out-rebound the other team. So doing it from all positions with an awareness is really important.
What I hear you saying too is that growth will consistently take place when you apply truth, whether it's, you know, personally, professionally, with your team. And I heard you say in a compelling interview with Chris Webber that your father told you that always have faith in the power of the truth. What is the truth about this team in terms of the intangibles and the heart that it has shown and the inner fortitude?
Well, you know, we've hung in. The challenge, really, in my mind, has been to bring a group of guys together, you know, and really unite them in a cause. And these are guys that that hadn't played together. You know, there's 8 or 9 new guys, so that's a lot. And so, you know, we're still working on that. But my feeling is that the team building aspect of this is, you know, if there's a pie chart, you know, and you got percentages of importance, I mean, the team building aspect of it is at least a third or a half. I mean, just getting the guys, you know, bringing them together, having them bring themselves together, going through hard times is a part of it. That's part of the growth when you go through tough stuff, and we've been through our share, and we've just got to now. You know, we've got to stick together, and we got to keep fighting.
How much of a value do you place on players when you are scouting them and determining if they are going to be a part of your system? Because I had a chance to catch up with your general manager, Donnie Nelson, and he said, yeah, we've had our Dennis Rodman type moments, but you guys want high character guys that when you face those fracturing experiences, that they're going to come together. They're not going to peel apart.
Yeah, it's really important. And there's a great saying I saw recently. I think my mom gave me a little thing. She's always giving me stuff with quotations, and it said something to the effect of adversity doesn't build character, it reveals it. And so, you know, what we found this year is that there is truth to that. But on the other side of it, you know, going through tough times when you're with a pro sports team, it's got to build togetherness because you've been through tough stuff. But you have to have enough success to build the belief. And at this point, you know, with winning 5 of 6, those are good signs. Our practices have been good the last couple of days. We got one more tomorrow before the game on Friday. So, you know, we've got some good things going, and my job is to make sure that we keep them going.
Well, one of the things I appreciate about you is after you guys won the world championship in 2011, you said, it's not about what you can't do, but it's about what you can do and what you can accomplish as a team. And the acronym TEAM, together each achieves more, and just coming together and having that positive mindset.
Yeah, look, if you want to sit down with any NBA roster and go through and nitpick the things the guys can't do, yeah, you can come up with a pretty good laundry list on just about every guy, even the stars. And so it's really important, and because this gets very challenging. These games are hard to win. I mean, you're going up against talented players. If you're on the road, you're in aggressive, loud buildings. You have great coaching. I mean, there's a lot going on. And so you've always got to view the pieces to your puzzle, each individual guy. What can that guy do? What can he do to the best of his ability, you know, to help our formula for winning? And it's something I learned a long time ago, you know, from some of the great coaches I worked with, Bill Fitch, Chuck Daly, guys like that. And it's really important, especially when you're going through tough times, to remind the guys, hey, here's the things we do well. Here's the things you do well. Do these things. Be aggressive with these things. You'll help yourself. You'll help us.